You're listening to Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and hot takes about all 12 NPB teams. Hosted by Jim Allen and John E. Gibson.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of June 19th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a rare Sunday night is my buddy Jim Allen. What's happening, man? Happy Interleague Conclusion Day, sort of, kind of like.
Yeah, sort of, kind of. Sunday, it's like being in like baseball church again.
Amen.
Indeed.
Hallelujah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, yeah, the whole notion of recording on a Sunday night was that we were going to have the results of the interleague session, and we were going to be able to talk about who won and which side won. Although, although it looked like the Pacific League was really going to settle head-to-head, but we have three standalone games, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and if the Central League can manage to sweep those games, it will produce the interleague session champion and also manage a tie of 53-53 head-to-head with the Pacific League. But I doubt that that's going to happen. So I'm going to say the Pacific League is going to wrap this thing up with one of those games.
Well, interesting, you know, because I do, whether you care or not, I mean, I do count the runs and the runs allowed. And as of Sunday night, it is 373 runs scored, 373 runs allowed.
Oh,
and that's
including this 16 run. So it's funny because I remember you and I talked about this, and I was looking at the run score. So you had a 9-0 game with SoftBank and Hanshin. You had a 4-0 game with Nippon Ham and Chunichi. And then you had this 11-4 game with the Seibu Lions beating the Hiroshima Carp. And I'm looking at these runs and I'm like, oh my goodness, Jim is here we go. But this is what I'm saying. Yeah, all the run differential, and you only get three wins out of those three games, and it doesn't really matter if you had three runs or 17. Yeah.
Because the CL had a sizable lead in runs yesterday, which was remarkable because that's something where they never have had. They've had a couple of times where they won the most games, but it wasn't like a overwhelming performance like some of the PL years where they'd outscore the Central League by, you know, 50 or 60 runs. And
there was a bludgeoning occurring. Yes.
Yeah. There was some blunt force trauma there.
Some gray matter on the field. Yeah.
A little of that. And well, they were picking bird brains off the Jingu turf. Sure.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, Let's get to the opening and we'll talk about the bird brains later. On this week's show, we've got Cy Snead of the Swallows as the guest. We're going to discuss the final, what we thought was the final week of Interleague, but we have these three standalone games going on. So we're going to talk about the rest of Interleague. We got Rockin' with Roki and Leaders. And I don't think we're going to be able to get to the high heat today, but let's start swinging anyway.
Clearing the bases!
Yeah, let's go for it. Okay, well, 2 weeks ago, I was at Jingu Stadium on a Saturday afternoon and got to talk to a few people, including Cy Snead. It was our first time, as with most of the imports who haven't been here for 5 years. It's our first time. And it was really a pleasure for a couple of reasons. One, and we talk about it quite a bit in the interview, is the Swallows approach, which old longtime listeners know that I've been enamored of for the last 3 years. And Cy Snead fits right into that. So I was really keen to hear his story. And there's a couple of things I still haven't figured out because I've been too lazy to look them up. But
busy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I confused lazy with busy. It's those two Z words, right? Busy. Busy. That's it. Busy. Yeah. That's the ticket.
Two Z words. There's a Fred Flintstone school of spelling, but yes, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Z-Y. Okay, so anyway, so we talked about this and that, and the one thing that is obvious is that the Swallows had just come out of a 13-game winless streak where they went 0-12-1. And Cy Snead threw, I believe, seven shutout innings to snap that streak in Kita, Hiroshima, Hokkaido. And so this was just a few days after that. So we're discussing that. Of course, since then, it's been rinse and repeat. Four wins, four straight losses, six straight losses. So let's get into it and hear about Cy Snead and the Auckland Swallows. Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Yakult Swallows right-hander Cy Snead. It's very good to meet you and to have you on the show.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. And first of all, before I get started, I got to remember my partner's questions, and I'm going to read them so I don't mangle them.
Okay.
Because he constantly says I misquote him and I misparaphrase him. Okay, hold on. Wrong one. Okay. All right. First of all, he wants to thank you for joining us. And one first question is really a softball one. Why Cy Snead and not Snead?
Honestly, I don't really know. The team asked me if I would be okay with doing that when I signed to come over here. And I said, sure, whatever you guys want. And so I showed up and it said Cy Snead on the back.
Okay, that goes along with a famous story. One time Roger Repo was here and they said, what do you want us to call you? Just call me Roger. And so his name on the back of the uniform was Roger. Okay. Now, when a team is seemingly trapped in a long skid like the recent one, what are meetings like among the starting pitchers?
You know, for me, it's just, yes, we had a little bit of a skid, but at the same time, you know, we had some games that, you know, one pitch or the ball bounces a little bit different and, you know, it's a totally different game for us, you know, and you got guys on base and, you know, somebody makes a great play and it's innings over instead of two runs scoring, you know, and that changes the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's just always staying positive and just, you know, focusing on pitch to pitch. If, you know, once a pitch is out of your hand, it's gone. You can't do anything about it. So okay. Just try to learn from it and make the next one. And, you know, same thing with a game. Once the game's over, there's nothing you can do about it. So, you know, just try to focus on the next one and take each pitch and each day, you know, one at a time.
Okay. Well, of course you had the big game not in Sapporo anymore, outside Sapporo. And that had to have been a huge, I don't know what was your emotions after that?
It was good. I mean, it was just all around good. You know, we scored a bunch of runs. We had really solid at bats against a, you know, really good starter. You know, we played good defense. You know, they kind of just did exactly what I was hoping they would do. They were aggressive and they were hitting balls at guys. And, you know, so it was just a nice game all the way around.
Okay. Now, I mentioned earlier that I think your approach fits really well with the Swallows, because something I noticed about 3 years ago was they had become a really, like a Pacific League team, and that they're really a bunch of strike throwers, much more challenge batters first pitch in the zone, and then get ahead in the count. And that seems to be your cup of tea.
Yeah, I mean, your best friend, I feel like, is a pitcher is strike one. And so, you know, whatever pitch that is, you know, to whatever hitter, you're nothing good happens ball one.
Yeah.
So, you know, just try to get ahead. And you know, when you're doing that, you're forcing guys to swing the bat. They swing at a pitch they might shouldn't. And, you know, they roll it over, or they pop up or whatever. And, you know, you get some quick outs. Then, you know, hopefully you're able to pitch deeper in the game.
Right. I mean, I certainly understand the logic of it and the stats behind it. One of the things I noticed, hold on a second, I'm getting old here. As we speak, I'm getting older. One of the things I noticed, this is it. I was studying about how hitters and pitchers, their fly ball tendencies change from park to park, especially here. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, yours don't. Your fly ball pitcher here, your fly ball pitcher elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I think the batters really determine. But you're such a strong, you know, you stick so much to your game plan that batters really have to play your game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, that's exactly what you said. I'm going to stick to my game plan. And, you know, we play in a small ballpark, and there's other ballparks that are small across the league. But, you know, it's not like they change it for our hitters. Mm-hmm. You know, our hitters have just as much of a chance on hitting homers or whatever. You know, and if the wind's blowing out one day or whatever, it's just there's nothing you can do about it. Mm-hmm. And so I would rather stay with my approach and pitch in the locations that I know that I'm going to be most successful in, then change and try to get some ground balls and, you know, maybe make a bad pitch. And instead of giving up, you know, a fly ball that maybe should have been an out that, you know, goes off the wall or is a homer, I'd rather give up that than pitching against my strengths and give up a bunch of hits, and, you know, they're hitting the ball hard in the gaps. So
okay, well, obviously that plays to one of the things about this team that we've noticed the last 3 years is the confidence. Guys never, even, although I'll tell you, at the end of that streak, I could see guys kind of like veering away from what they do best, trying to do more, it seems. But that's something we haven't seen in 3 years. This team seems to be supremely confident.
Mm-hmm.
Do your job and everything will work out.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's, you know, the team's been so good at, you know, if one guy, you know, doesn't cash a runner in on third or whatever the situation is, the guy behind him is going to pick him up, you know, and everybody has confidence in the guy in front of him and the guy behind him. You know, guys playing this position, that position, like everybody's got each other's backs. And so right. I think that that just, you know, has a inherent confidence in that of, you know, I'm going to try my best. And hey, if they beat me, they're not going to beat the next guy.
Okay. How easy is it working with Mucho?
Yeah, no, I like throwing to Mucho a lot. You know, we've got pretty good communication between my limited Japanese and his, you know, a little bit of English, and so we can communicate very efficiently, actually. You know, right. Very rarely do we kind of get stuck on a word or a phrase or something, but no, it's great. I mean, I think the first few times throwing in here in 21, just kind of feeling each other out, you know, mm-hmm. kind of what's best, and you know, me trying to figure out kind of what's going to work here in Japan,
right?
And then you know, him trying to kind of also figure out the same thing and, you know, try to help me out. So no, but it's been great, like throwing Mucho.
Now, one of the things that a lot of the pitchers talk about is the large volume of left-handed slap hitters, you know. So if you had a two-seamer and you throw it mm-hmm. to a left-hander thinking, you know, they're going to miss this and the ball is sailing over the third baseman's
yep.
head,
yep.
how long did that take you to adjust to?
Yeah, so luckily I've never been able to really throw much of a two-seam or a sinker or anything. I'm you know, pretty much four-seam only. So,
okay.
Yeah, but, you know, the game changed a little bit because you have those guys that, you know, want to hit the ball the other way, but every once in a while they'll, you know, take their chances and try to launch on a fastball in.
Absolutely.
So, you know, just having a good mix and trying to feel out the hitters beforehand and, you know, those little speedy guys just, you know, they're the guys that that's the fly ball to. Please hit a fly ball. You
okay.
know, because the best thing you can do or the best thing they can do is hit the ball on the ground and beat it out. So,
right.
hey, hit it in the air and let one of our guys run it down.
Now, one of the things that came over is, I guess 2 years ago, Tomohito Ito came over to be the pitching coach.
Mm-hmm.
And how is he helping?
Yeah, Ito's great. He's helped me a lot, you know, when I've had times where, you know, maybe I've lost a pitch or you know, been out of my delivery a little bit. You know, he's really good at, you know, helping you get back in there and having, you know, a little word or a little phrase or whatever to, you know, kind of get you back in. So he's been great and, you know, really like working with him too.
Yeah, that's pretty much everybody says the same thing. So I was curious. And the last thing is what have you picked up? What have you learned in Japan that you didn't do have as part of your game before you came here?
I changed my cutter a little bit.
Okay.
So in the States, I threw like a really, really true cutter, like
okay.
very four seam, you know, with just a little bit of cut at the very end. And because the hitters here, their approach is slightly different mm-hmm. and just the way the swing path is, that pitch just didn't really work.
Okay.
You're just trying to get off the barrel in the States and let them hit a fly ball to center field or something or roll it over. Here, that's, and, you know, instead of being a hard single, it's a soft single,
right.
you know, but it's still a hit. So I had to change the cutter a little bit and try to make it a little bit bigger, almost, I don't want to call it a mini slider, but
okay.
it's just a bigger cutter.
Okay.
And I think it's just a little bit more effective for the swing paths here.
Did you do that with a grip a little more?
Actually kept the grip the exact same. It's just a little bit of, you know, trying to stay over the top of the ball, a little bit of release.
Oh, okay.
And then, the other thing is I always threw a fork when I was growing up. And then, in about 2016,
uh-huh.
I guess, it was like it fell out of my pocket or I didn't pack it on the road one day and it was just gone. It was just absolutely gone. And I didn't throw a good one for like 2 years and I just scrapped it. And then I came here and then working with Ito and the other guys and asked them how they throw theirs. You know, I was able to find mine again and it's been really effective for me.
Yeah. I saw something the other day. It's like, 5%, 2% of the MLB pitches are forkballs.
Yeah.
In Japan, it's like 21%.
Yeah, no, it's a super effective pitch. I think guys in the States can be a little bit hesitant to throw it because, you know, they're concerned about an elbow thing or whatever. But I think that, you know, depending on how you throw and, you know, there's a lot of factors on that that maybe just doesn't get taught as much as it should. But, man, it's if you can, you know, have a good one, it's a super effective pitch. I mean, you look at, like, Senga, you know, he was obviously good here. he goes over to the States and he's just punching guys out left and right.
Okay, which begs the question, why did you pick it up when you were a kid?
Dad threw one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my dad threw one, so he taught me and my brother when we were young. And then, yeah, like I said, it was truly just like I left it somewhere one day and it was absolutely gone. My hand, I completely forgot how to throw it. I'd try to throw them in a game and I'd throw them like 40 feet, or I'd throw them like almost over the catcher's head and I just were all over the place. And so I actually remember the last one I threw was in a triple A game in Salt Lake City. And I was like, okay, like, I had a guy with, 0-2 or something, like, all right, I'm going to try it, throw it right down the middle. Dude hits a double down the line. I was like, I'm never throwing it again.
Okay.
I'm done. And so, then I came here and, basically just tried to relearn it, tried to forget everything that I thought I knew about it, and just kind of relearn it. And really, once I started throwing it, remembering some of the feel of, oh, that's how that used to feel when it was good, and things like that. So I was able to pick it back up relatively quickly.
And the last question is the ball, because I was just talking to Keiji Takahashi, and because he hasn't been pitching, and I said, what happened? He said, I got unused to the Japanese ball after the WBC. He was getting, he was having trouble with his grip and his release and his getting blisters and things. Did you have any trouble picking up with the Japanese ball?
I didn't have any trouble with it. I actually really like it a lot. I think it's a lot better than the MLB ball.
Yeah.
The MLB ball is just so slick. It's like throwing a wet rock half the time.
Okay.
It's just, really, really hard, which I actually think is maybe one of the reasons why you see so many guys that are having elbow problems, is they're just having to grip the ball so tight when they throw. But here, it's got a little bit of tack to it. Mm. And the rosin here is really good, so when you go to the rosin, you get a little bit extra even. For me, it was I thought the transition was fine.
Okay, I said that was gonna be the last one, but you've been playing with Munetaka Murakami now for a few years since he broke out, and what's that been like watching him?
Oh, it's great. I mean, obviously, he's really special to play, and like last year, I mean, when me and Scott McGuff, we'd talk about him, and this time of the year, I just said I would stop pitching to him. He was at like 20 something homers, in interleague, and he's hitting 340 or 350. And she's like, I just wouldn't face him. Unless we were up or down three, just put him on base. I'll take my chances with the next guy who, even if they're hitting 290, it's still 50 or 60 points less. Take my chances. And he was just really hitting the ball really well last year. Obviously, he was in a really good spot, and got off to a little bit of a rough start this year, but I kind of think that, like the team, he's one good day, he's one good swing away from being right back, where he needs to be, and he'll be just fine.
See, like the other day when he had kind of a really poor swing and that a tough pitch, and he hits a home. Sometimes when he just makes contact, that ball is going to fly.
Well, and he's got so much power, and he hits the ball the other way so well.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing about not pitching him. There's not a safe spot to go. You can't go, anywhere in the zone or really out of the zone. I remember looking towards the end of the season last year at his locations on his homers, and it was just the entire strike zone. It was above the zone, it was below, it was in, it was off, and everywhere in the zone on every pitch. There wasn't like if you throw a changeup, down and away, odds are he's not going to. Well, good luck, because he also might put it in the seats. So it was everything.
It was kind of scary considering he was just 22 last year.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to not take up any more of your time. We want to thank you for being on the show, and hopefully we'll have you on again.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Snead. Although, to be honest, it's hard for me not to say Cy Snead all the time, because as we pointed out, that's the name on the uniform. I guess the next question is why the Swallows asked him to have Cy Snead on the uniform, because did they think Snead would be, is there a thing about Sunido that would be awkward in Japanese, I wonder?
I don't know, but I never thought that we'd have to go over his head to get the answer for what's on his back.
that's an interesting anatomical approach to that one. Yeah. So what stood out for you?
Well, this interview was gold. I really encourage all of you who have a little bit of time to just go back and listen to it again. Don't let this episode get away without one more listen to Mr. Snead. I thought it was awesome. Thank you, Cy Snead. See, I got to say his whole name too, because
I know
we're just programmed.
We're becoming slaves to the system.
That's
Stop
right.
it.
We can't. But his responses were awesome. The questions were awesome. And the whole chat just kind of makes up for the whole shutout response that the Swallows gave us over these 3 years. So great to talk to these guys. The Osuna home chat was great, and this one was even better. And so first of all, starting off with the question that I asked him, I don't really think he answered my question at all, because I was wondering what the meetings were like, and he answered a question that I don't actually know what that response would fit. But, you know, that's fine. That happens. I remember we had a Sabre pitcher on years ago who barely responded to anything I asked. Every time I asked him a question about one specific thing, he'd answer a question about something else that didn't really jive with what I was talking about. So it does happen. I don't think Cy's responses were random and unrelated. It's just that they weren't direct about the meetings. And I think sometimes when we ask these questions, of course, we haven't told the guys what we're going to ask anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think if we catch them off guard and they don't want to spill any kind of inside information, that's the direction they go, is to give us a generic kind of answer. So, I mean, I think that's what happened there. Well, you know, obviously they were talking about serious things in those meetings that maybe they can't discuss. So that's what I'm gonna say, that he was turning the conversation in a different direction to avoid giving us any secrets. And then there were so many, I don't know, aspects to unpack, but I guess I have to narrow it down. So him working his pitches to fit the general approach in NPB, I thought was something we haven't heard. We've heard it in some respects. We've heard left-handed batters and right-handed pitchers even left-handed pitchers in some respects, and what pitches that they throw to these guys who they just trying to slap it into left field. And here's Cy telling us, okay, these guys, they have a certain approach, and the way that they swing the bats, that pitch is not effective. I'm throwing the pitch into their swing. As long as they've got the timing down and the ball's in the middle, near the plate, anywhere near the plate, they can get a bat on it because it's coming into their swing. So he had to change that approach. And I guess this was the most interesting story I've heard about a guy junking a pitch, when he talked about junking his forkball. And not that he was, you know, he did it before he came to Japan, so not that it was related to being here, but the whole story of him, okay, look, I'm going to try to throw one, and he ends up throwing one down the middle, and a guy doubles off, and he says, okay, I'm not throwing this pitch ever again. And I never really heard anything like that. I thought that was really fascinating. And I guess it gives you an understanding of how delicate things can be with these guys, you know. Once you get to be a fine-tuned athlete, and I keep trying to tell people about this, once your body is used to certain things, change does not bode well for consistency all the time.
Right.
And so I loved your question about the ball, and I know we discussed it on last week's show, and that you said it in the interview that you talked to Takahashi about it. And so that's a big thing. So him coming to Japan, that's going to change circumstances. And then discussing the pitch with the Swallows coaches. And, you know, we all know that forkball splitters popular here in Japan. And so for him to pick it up, get some coaching, get that feeling back, and be able to throw it again, I just thought that was an outstanding story in terms of somebody coming to Japan and not necessarily getting better, but making that change for the better. And the change was going back to something that they used to do. So it's just, it comes full circle for me. So I thought that it was just just an awesome story for him to tell us. And I'm glad the listeners got a chance to hear that. And then the quality of the MPB baseball itself, when he goes into detail and says, you know, throwing the MLB ball is like throwing a wet rock. And that's so descriptive. You know, I was thinking a pool ball. You know, a pool cue ball or something like that. But any pool ball that you have that is wet and you're trying to throw that, and him saying that might be linked to why pitchers are having Tommy John over there. And that's a great point, because guys throw their arms to death over here in Japan and don't have as many Tommy John injuries. And so I thought, that's an excellent point. Talk to the docs, talk to the scientists about this. Maybe that has something to do with it. And it's so arrogant of Major League Baseball to think that it gets everything right. Maybe Major League Baseball has to take a look and see if it can't be better. If a guy like this is coming over here and saying, hey, look what they got over here. It's better and people are not getting injured and we don't have to go under the knife and miss a whole season or a whole year and do all this rehab. Rehab sucks. I know it sucks. And I haven't been out a year of anything, but I've been off my feet for 3 months with that broken toe I had about 6 years ago. So I it just sucks. So awesome stuff. Super awesome stuff from Sai. Really loved it. What about you?
A couple of things. One, the thing that I was too busy for.
This man learns.
The thing I was too busy for was asking my, because I asked it when I thought about it when I asked it, and I thought about it when I listened to it again. And then I kept thinking, I'm a bit ADD. So I'm one of those people who anything that I absolutely think I'm going to remember, that's the biggest candidate to forget. Because I don't write it down and I don't make a memo. If I think I'm going to forget it, then I'll scribble it down somewhere and I have a chance to remember. But anything I'll get, I got it. That's I ain't got it. So anyway, and that was, why did Sai Snead's father throw a forkball? You know the answer to that?
Well, no, I don't.
Okay. His father, Bob Snead, is from Susanville, California. Sai's from Nevada. And which I forgot to ask him about, because there's like this pipeline of people in NPB who come from the Reno area, although I think his size from Elko, which is up the road a bit.
Okay.
And his father, Robert, was drafted in the 42nd round of the 1986 MLB June draft by the New York Mets.
Oh, gosh. Out of high school? Out of college? Please say college.
He was drafted out of Lassen College.
Okay, so that makes us about the same age.
Yeah, no. Well, you.
Yeah, you. Well, I wasn't talking.
I was in Japan 4 years removed from my junior college graduation by that time.
Yeah, I'm talking about
so
me.
Anyway,
not you.
So his dad threw a forkball. So that was interesting. And of course, as you mentioned, the story about Japan and the pitches, I'm sure you remember it, parallels the story of Jeremy Powell, who didn't rediscover the curveball, but he'd been basically talked out of throwing it in the U.S. minors. So there's that. And then he came to Japan and they said, well, why don't you throw that? It'll work. And
Jeremy did, yes.
Ironically, the guy who got him to do that was a guy who he and his... I want to spill the beans. Okay, well, okay. I'm only going to spill the beans on you, Jeremy. He referred to the guy, although later he had much affection for him after he died, Shigeru Kobayashi, but when he was alive and the Kintetsu Buffalo's pitching coach, he referred to him as Mr. Burns.
From The Simpsons.
The character from The Simpsons. Enough of that, but yeah, Jeremy did the curveball and Sai had the forkball. And of course, if you need to find your forkball, they got a whole lost and found here in Japan. They'll find it for you.
Yeah.
So, and Tomohito Ito is famous, of course, famous on our podcast because of Tony Barnett talking about how, you know, it helped him shape his pitches. And here we've got another example of that. And Ito will tell you basically he don't know nothing. He studies, but the pitchers know everything and he knows nothing, but he's a humble person. So anyway, I did enjoy that. And as far as the ball goes, there's one more seam to add to that story.
Look at thread. You.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. There's one more seam to add to that thread, which is, or I guess it should be thread to that seam, but.
Hey, you know, if it's on a baseball, we're good.
Okay. Right. Okay. I got it.
You're
covered.
On the ball.
Good. Okay. Well, and that is until I think 2021, when MLB bought Rawlings so they could ostensibly keep all the balls the same, but then have been doing some other shenanigans with them, which I find, I don't know, both intensely pleasing and annoying at the same time.
Yes.
Arrogant is the word that comes up. Anyway, so when they bought Rawlings, one of the reasons for that was A, so they could ensure quality control, to which Rob Manfred at the winter meeting said, well, they're baseballs. You can't have quality control.
Yes, I remember.
And And the people I know who really study baseballs, who pull them apart by the seams and examine them at great length, because they're weird. Sorry. you know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Said, well, we were scoffing at him, and he went like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm saying, and she's going, this, my friend, the astrophysicist who does this baseball stuff, was going like, what, have you ever pulled a baseball apart by the seams? No, I didn't think so. So anyway, MLB, until they got the balls, they started manufacturing their own balls, used to have a different ball for AAA. And this was a problem for AAA pitchers becoming MLB pitchers, because they had to not only get called up and go into different working environment, but they had to deal with a different ball, a ball that was different in ways they couldn't predict. It was a change that required them to adjust on the fly when they had to adjust to MLB hitters on the fly.
Right.
And so it was always going to be hard. So now they're doing a pre-tacked ball, which apparently a lot of people don't like, because when you go from the pre-tacked ball to the tack to the MLB ball, which is like throwing a wet something or other, then that's another hard adjustment. But if you recall, in the 2021 in the Olympics, all the players coming over for the USA team, and some guys who played for other USA minor league teams who were with Olympic teams, were going, holy smokes, look at the balls they get to use in Japan. This is not fair. So yeah, that is something that is an issue. So I thought that was kind of interesting in the bit about his dad and lots of other things. But the last thing I'll mention, because I gotta give you this one, is my friend Meredith, who is the astrophysicist. She because she examines all the balls and she studies them and she keeps records of them, she knows how to identify the balls
mm-hmm.
that are in play, and she gets people collect foul balls and things and send them to her. So she knew that last year during Aaron Judge's home run chase, MLB had basically balls that had been made the year before that were livelier.
Mm.
And they knew which balls were which. They had a batch of livelier balls and a batch of deader balls. And they were making sure that in the games where Aaron Judge was playing, they were using the livelier balls. This is one of the things that MLB has been doing. And sometimes you'll see games where, like, the Angels had a game. I wouldn't be surprised if MLB has an older supply of the livelier balls that they know are livelier, that they're not making sure the Angels have lively balls in their games.
Because it's not only Otani who's hitting a bunch of home runs. It's a lot of home runs.
MLB, it looks very much like MLB is just saying, well, this is like in the steroid era, when MLB was saying, oh, we don't know nothing about no steroids, but go ahead and use them because it's good for the headlines. And now they're going like, well, this is a good story. Let's pump it up. Let's put some extra juice in it by giving them juiced baseballs, because they do know the difference. The balls are marked. They're marked by when and where they're made on the cases, and the balls are stamped. And so they're completely 100% identifiable. And every time they ask MLB about it, they say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. It's too complicated for you.
Yeah. And I mean,
where have we heard those explanations?
Too complicated for you. Yes. Anytime you get management talking to the workforce, but anyway.
yes. Okay. Well, so anyway, so that's all I had to say about that. So shall we move on to the upwards?
Yeah, I was going to say baseball, the MPB baseball versus the MLB baseball is a whole separate podcast in its own.
Yeah. So we have the Emeritus on here, actually. If she's ever untied, I think she's been too busy. I send her Japanese baseballs, and courtesy of people who can't, whose names shouldn't be mentioned because they might be blacklisted.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well,
yeah, because that
make sure you scrub all those communications. But
indeed, yeah. So Yeah, let's talk about Swallows.
Yeah, we do want to thank Cy for taking the time to chat with us and give us those great answers. And let's talk about the Swallows a little bit here. And you talked about the fact that they had a skid, and then I had my question was directed toward that long skid that they had. Now they're struggling again, and here we have them losing six consecutive interleague games here to end interleague session. Although they have one more game, they are playing on, let me get the date right here, it is Tuesday. They're on the Tuesday game, so they hopefully they're playing against the Eagles, so hopefully for them they can get it right for that night. Then there's another break, and then we're going to start playing on the weekend and get back into league play. But I you know, we were talking before we went on mic, and I'm you know, you're a Swallows fan in general. I'm a Dragons fan in general. And me watching my team versus you watching your team, and just for a night, if I had to watch the Dragons the whole game, you know, I would find a way to pull my, I keep my hair cropped very short. I would find a way to pull it all out. But luckily, they're all games. there are a bunch of games going on at the same time. I don't have to suffer. I just check in if they get a runner on or something like that, or whenever I want. I don't have to live this torture. But with the Swallows, you know, they're scoring runs. Their games are engaging. They just, they're having trouble winning games. And it's the same thing you see with typical bad teams, where, which is they can't pitch when they hit and vice versa. And with the Dragons, it's very consistent. They can't hit. And they can pitch. And then one day there's an outlier when they do actually hit a little, but they still can't win the game, or they just win a game 8-2 or something like that. But those are outliers, and they come, you know, now and again. The Swallows, other than the struggles of Munetaka Murakami, and we've all been worried about him, and we're still looking at it. It's so funny. I looked at the story today, and it says, one of the headlines, I guess I looked at, I opened up the Yahoo Navi app on my phone, and then one of the stories said, Swallows lose sixth straight, but on the bright side, Murakami had three hits. And I'm like, there's even good when they lose. It's in a good line.
That, I'll tell you, as somebody who does spend, you know, I do look at 12 teams, but it's probably 12 teams, but maybe 15% of that is looking at the Swallows. It's just my, you know, my inclination.
Sure.
And I have exactly that same thinking. I'm saying, well, the Swallows are getting their butts kicked, but maybe Murakami did something that'll make me feel better.
And he didn't end a home run even, but even if he struck out three times, somebody else did something, like Osuna hit a couple home runs, or Domingo Santana hit a couple home runs, or, you know, some young player comes up and has a nice debut, or some pitcher does well out of the bullpen. There's some ray of hope. There's something positive. But I still can't believe this team is 16 games under 500. At least, I don't know. I haven't seen the updated. They're 16 games under 500 as we speak. And it's weird to see this team struggle. And I guess what I really want to say about everything in terms of sports is you think you know, but you don't know. And it's so delicate. And I think I say this every year, the difference between winning and losing can be a couple of little tiny things that you might not even notice.
Oh, sure. Well, actually, my wife was instructing me what was wrong with Minnetaka Murakami the other day.
Oh, and she should get on the phone and talk to this guy.
Yeah.
And he's costing himself millions of signing bonus money here.
Indeed. And I didn't disagree with her.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't disagree with her feeling about, you know, why, but I disagreed with her conclusion, which is, this is what is wrong. And my conclusion was, this might be what's wrong, because we can't be in his shoes. We can't occupy his physical space and understand his aches and pains and worries and, you know, and traumas and vision. And we can't go inside his brain. So basically, if you think you know, then you are thinking way too much. I put that in the category with people who write, sports writers who write stories and columns about which players should retire, because that sports writer sitting in his, at his desk or watching on TV or from the press box knows, and talking to coaches and informed people, knows more about that individual's life costs and benefits than they do. So I did not disagree with her thinking. I thought it was, my thinking was very much along the same lines, except I don't have a clue. There's no evidence that what makes sense to us is actually the reason. So I would hesitate to say this is why he's doing it. You know, as you said, there was, people were talking about his feet. And there, I've seen things with his swing that look, what I see is the swing he's producing is very inconsistent, and his timing has been terrible. And, but when he lucks onto a pitch and he hits it with, without any, you know, then we're reminded of what happened last year,
mm-hmm.
when it seemed like he was trying to bunt and the ball went over the fence. You know, he was hitting it so sweetly.
Yeah.
With an absolute minimum, it seems, with a minimum of effort, the ball would go 20 rows into the stands. And we've seen that a few times when he's lucked into a, hitting a pitch, how far those things fly. So we know that is, you know, that's part of, that's the part of the equation that is still there. I mean, his, the action on his bat is still really, really, really good. The energy that he transfers to the bat in the bat and ball collision is still really, really good. But yeah, the timing among other things has not, he's not been able to reproduce that. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But why, I don't have a clue.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, looking at all, obviously you can look at ERA and all those other things, but I would, I just, my eyes just go to when you look in the standings and you see that they have allowed 260 runs.
Mm.
That's the most in Japan.
Which is, yeah, if the Swallows are really good, they're going to allow about, they're going to be around the middle of the league. If they're around the middle of the league, then they're going to be competitive. But if they're at the bottom, it's not like, you know, I don't want to say it's not a recipe for success, but yeah, it's not a healthy indicator.
No, it's not. And I mean, just for comparison, because I like to do these things.
Go for it.
The Dragons have allowed 205 runs.
Ouch.
No, that's not very many. I mean, that's second behind the Hanshin Tigers. They've only allowed 197.
Well, that's actually, I mean, that's where the Dragons have to be to be successful. Of course, they also have to score runs. I mean, when they were in their golden years, their golden era under Hiromitsu Ochiai.
The good old days where they didn't really need offense because...
Well, they did. They had a really good offense, except it didn't look like it because they scored like 60% of their runs on the road.
Oh, okay.
And Nagoya Dome would chop a run off their ERA, so it made the pitchers look. I think it was the pitchers were kind of ordinary, but the defense and the offense were outstanding. That's just my take.
Yeah, but yeah. So 260 runs is just that's just too much in terms of
That's a half a season's. That's a half a season's of runs, of a normal season worth of runs, and we're still 3 weeks away from half a season, so that's a bad look.
Yeah, so that's a lot, and they don't get quality starts. I think their quality start rate is 36% if you round it up a little bit, and that's easily the lowest in the league. And in terms of in Japan, it is definitely the lowest. But SoftBank doesn't. I mean, SoftBank is right at 36, but it's different because I think SoftBank has a plan with some of the pitchers. So not getting a quality start out every time is not their goal anyway. And they'll give up the 3 runs in 5 innings if they can get through the 5 innings and then piece together the rest of the game with a lead or in a tie game. But anyway, so it's just different. It's just different from what we've seen the past year. But if any team can right the ship, I really think the Swallows have the ability. And I fully expect that when we are looking at the final standings, they'll at least be closer to the playoffs than any other team that's not currently in, well, any other team, the Carp or the Dragons.
I think they definitely have the offensive. I think you look at the players and they're not all that different from the ones they've had the past 2 years. And I thought actually in many ways they had a better team than they had the last 2 years, but the results have been mixed at best. I mean, they did have injuries. They have injuries, of course, every year.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of guys have not been, the whole offense has not been, has been misfiring here and there. I mean, the fact that it can misfire is a good, you know, is a good indication. It has, you know, it can conceivably hit and fire with great aplomb.
Mm.
But the fact that it's not, you know, this is one of the things. It's like when you have a hitter, you know how good a hitter is when his terrible year is better than most of other people's good years.
Right.
And the Swallows are kind of like that. You know how bad they are because you know how good they were.
Sure.
And so, and they're, again, more or less the same team. So we'll see. They do rely on a few older guys. Certainly one of the things last year was they'd stopped counting. And in fact, I think I said during last year's preview that we'll know how good the Swallows are when they basically take Norichika Aoki aside and say, you need to curb your ambition because we don't have a place for a guy with a 290 on base percentage.
And
they basically sidelined him for half the season. And he'd been a big part of their 2021 championship, but in 2022 they went like, nope. And so, but he's back again this year and he's in and out of the lineup, but it's not a good sign. There's lots of not good signs there. So we'll see.
Okay.
But I'm not really holding up much hope. I do, as I said in the interview, you know, a trademark of the Swallows has been the fact you never thought they were losing confidence. But when I see them just getting beat over and over again, I wonder how many people are beginning to think they need to be the ones to carry the team. They need to change their approach and they need to do things to take, you know, to gain a small advantage. They need to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Mm.
That's kind of what I'm thinking when I see this sort of like panic, you know, when they're just losing over and over again. And the only two wins they had in the past week and a half were against the team with the worst record in the Pacific League.
Yeah. Yeah. And the teams with the worst records in the Pacific League did well against the Dragons. So just goes to show you don't know. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and just talk about Interleague really quickly. Like I said, the whole point of this exercise for me to push through late on a Sunday night was to get the final results here. So we're not going to have them. And we're looking at the schedule and we tried to figure this thing out before we started recording. But the story that I read that I told Jim about before we actually went on mic here was it's all about the Bay Stars. The Bay Stars win on Monday, which is our release date. There's a game Monday night playing Nippon Ham at home. And if they win that game or they tie that game, they are the Interleague champions for the first time since 2005 when Interleague began. If not, then we have four teams with 11-7 records. And it gets into all kinds of permutations and we'll have to have the math gods drop down from the heavens to figure out who's going to win this thing. But
they're not gods. They're just geeks with computers.
Geeks with computers.
He says,
Keyless Joe. He's got no keys on his computer.
got pointing a finger at himself.
Okay. So anyway, we will just... We can talk about it next week, but I'm looking for the Bay Stars.
We'll let somebody else do the math.
Yes, exactly. Those geeks or what are they, gods from
Geeks or Gods.
Geeks or Gods from him, from the baseball heavens drop down. But anyway, the whole point is hopefully the Bay Stars can win it outright, make Michael Westbay and the gang, the fan base happy. And I would be happy for them.
Interesting. And, because if the Bay Stars lose, so the Bay Stars are the only team with game left of the four teams that have 11 wins. Wow. So the Bay Stars lose. We'll have four teams. Okay, here, how's this for, I'm going to throw this. I threw this in my blog last night, but they no longer call the Interleague, the Interleague winner is no longer called the Interleague champion. It's now called the team with the highest winning percentage in Interleague. Well, if the Bay Stars lose tomorrow, we will have four teams with 6-1-1 winning percentages. And then they will have a tiebreaker to decide which of those winning percentages is the highest. which team's 0.611 is higher than the other three teams' 0.611?
Don't do it, Space Stars. Just wrap it up. Of course, you know what's going to happen. Big Boss is going to go out there, do some goofy stuff, and win the game, and just laugh all the way back to Hokkaido. That's what's going to happen. But oh well.
I hope so.
Well, yeah, it would just be
because then we get more stupidity, and stupidity is fun.
Well, yes, it's fun. Yes, so are clowns. Yeah. And the thing is, I thought the Giants had wrapped this thing up because on Friday the Giants had this. For them, a fantastic ninth inning comeback off of Tomohito Sakai of the Eagles.
Right.
They got Hayato Sakamoto hits a three-run walk-off home run. They're in position. They just got to win Sunday or Saturday, the next day, I think, and they'd be in even better position to close it out. And they lost by identical scores of 2-1 on back-to-back days here to the Eagles, one of the poorer teams in the Pacific League. And they couldn't push over. And it just looked, I just kept thinking, well, even today, they created an opportunity. They got a runner on in the ninth inning, at least a tie, and they couldn't push that run in. They just couldn't get that next hit to finish it off. So they don't get to win. You had SoftBank coming back on Saturday against the Hanshin Tigers and then breaking up a scoreless game. Carter Stewart Jr.,
I know.
Awesome
Carter
start today.
Stewart Jr., say it again.
Yeah, yeah. Scoreless outing for him today and his first start of the season. And
right. He's coming back from an injury, which is why apparently he was all hyped and ready to go before the preseason. And yeah, well, that's a good sign because this could be his year.
Yeah. So, and SoftBank was, before that they had been scuffling a little bit. So they go into Koshien and do well there. And I don't know. I'm just looking at the Bay Stars thinking at the beginning of this thing, we were talking about it's Hiroshima, it's the DeNA Bay Stars every year, really bad in Interleague. And now the Bay Stars are in position to win their first Interleague championship, and I can just see everything falling apart. I just hope they win the game. Just win the game and end it there, please.
Yeah, it looked like, well, they had Roki Sasaki on Sunday, and you figured, well, that's going to be a tough row to hoe.
I know, but Mr. Bad Luck was in the stadium.
It wasn't bad luck.
No, it
wasn't bad luck. It was we'll bad get to basketballs.
Yeah, we'll get to him in a little while. But anyway,
I see. You were referring to a specific individual who will remain unnamed. Okay. Okay.
I
wasn't throwing those fastballs. If I'd been the one throwing the fastballs,
they wouldn't have been very fast. Yeah.
No, six runs would have been from the first batter. they would have done it like cricket. Until I get him out, he's going to keep batting.
Well, and I can just tell you,
he'd still be batting.
Until you get him out. 3 days go by.
Exactly. So
I just love Interleague. I like I said, my whole goal was to get this to be talking about who won. tonight, so we're not doing that. But I will enjoy the game tomorrow, and you know, hopefully we get the conclusion without the mathematicians coming down from the baseball heavens. All right, let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the leaders. So there have been some surprises in MPB this season, and I wanted to discuss a couple of them in particular. So let's start with the batting average, and I guess I'm most impressed by Yuma Tongu of the Oryx Buffaloes. And I wonder, as Satoshi Nakajima has been sidelined by an illness, apparently, and so he hasn't been around managing the games the better part of this second half of this week here going into the weekend. But I just think that Tongu might be kind of a product of Nakajima and his style of handling players, because this is, I mean, I've seen this guy. I know he's like a right-handed Takumi Oshiro of the Giants, but he's the right-handed version, swings a heavy bat, has a long kind of a powerful swing. Not a guy you would think is going to lead the league in batting average, or, you know, going toward the All-Star break here in June. But maybe a guy you would figure to have a bunch of home runs or lead the league in slugging percentage or something like that, something more along those lines. And I'm shocked. And I, you know, there were a couple games, I think, in interleague during which I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, okay, that pitch should not have been hit for a home run. You know, how did he do that? And, you know, is he picking his leg up, getting it down fast? Is he, what is he doing exactly to do this? And I'm not spotting anything. He just looks like the same guy. It just looks like he's just making better contact more consistently. And he still has a really strong, powerful swing. And for him to be up among the league leaders, I mean, it's not even close, right? His batting average?
No, because none of the number two is .289.
Yeah, he's hitting .344, which is, I mean, it is, I mean, again, not even close, because there's not really nobody hitting .300 right behind him. But what are you seeing with him, and what do you like about, I mean, I'm just shocked.
Usually when you see something like that, a guy who's not really doing anything, as you said, he's not really doing anything different. He goes through stretches where he always made good contact, where he looks like he has a couple of adjustments when, you know, he has that two strike swing, which is pretty common in Japan, you know, shortens the stroke and, you know, will go the other way when he needs to go the other way. He's got a lot of tools in the box, but basically it's still, like you said, it's a powerful swing. And like Oshiro, he's a former catcher. Yeah, he has caught fairly recently. But yeah, it's my guess when I see his numbers, the first thing I think about is that he's striking out less. But this is a guy who doesn't really strike out to begin with. You know, that's sort of his thing. He's got a heavy, he swings a big bat. He's got a powerful swing, but he's not a guy who strikes out. You know, he's always been able to make contact. So he has, however, changed his strikeout to walks noticeably. That I think it's more a matter of him just being more selective in the pitches he's hitting, because last year he had a career high 271 plate appearances, and he walked less than half as many times as he struck out, and that was a huge improvement, because he was a four times as many strike, you know, he was typical young guy striking out a lot in, you know, with few opportunities to play. But as soon as Satoshi Nakajima showed up from the farm team and brought him with him and gave him playing time, he struck out, he walked half as often as he struck out. And now this year he's walking two thirds as often as he's striking out. So his strikeouts are not really increasing, but his walks are. So I'm going to guess it could just be nothing. It could absolutely just be nothing. It could be just better results with the same, you know, more or less the same, producing the same thing, but just getting better results by random chance. But my guess is if I see the higher walk total, I'm going to guess that part of it is a little better approach and better pitch selection.
Yeah. All right. And then in the Central League, it's Toshiro Miyazaki of the Bay Stars who's leading the way, and he's hitting .374. And we talked about him earlier this season. He had this home run today off of Noki Sasaki, and Sasaki was just shaking his head after the home run, saying, "Oh man, this stadium is a joke." If that's a home run, this stadium is a joke. But Miyazaki is another guy, and we talked about the fact he's not going to get a lot of infield hits. He's not going to get a lot of speed hits. And yet here he is chasing. I mean, he's in the neighborhood. I mean, he's in the zip code of 400 right here as we're heading toward the All-Star game. And that's kind of, it's wild to me that he can do these things. We haven't seen this from him. We've seen some really good starts from him, but like a career year right now, that seems odd to me. And it just looks like to me, like I said before, this is a guy who's healthy, because I don't see a lot of difference in what's going on in his game either.
No, I don't even. With him, I would say absolutely. It's not like Tongu, who you can see, okay, he's getting more playing time and he's doing things better. I mean, this is a guy who's been older, who is older. He's not really any different from the, I think this is more just a good health and being in a good place, being confident. I don't know what, you know, his biorhythm is maybe in sync.
Yeah, he's 34, so maybe he's in touch with his biorhythms. And
could be he's got his power, he's got the right collection of power stones this year, who knows. But he he's having the kind of, you know, the basically most everything except the batting average is looking like 5 or 6 years ago. I think it was 2018 when he was the Central League batting champion, or that was 2017 when he was the Central League batting champion. But
yes,
he's
17.
Basically looking
yes.
like he's looking like those two seasons, very much more like 2018 when he hit 28 home runs. So that's really where he's tracking right now. And except that year he had a .363 on base percentage, and this year he's .440. But again, that's he is walking a little more than normal, but it's the batting average. So it's probably maybe getting better contact, hitting better pitches. I don't know. It's some combination of those things. I don't see him as being a particularly better player, but he's certainly getting better results. But he has been consistent, so that likely points to good health.
Well, like to see the Bay Stars up there in the standings and having a chance to go to the playoffs, especially with Daisuke Miura as the manager. I really like him. So let's talk about the home runs now. In the Pacific League, Chusei Manami, a guy I've always talked about his athleticism, but he's starting to put it together now, and he leads the Pacific League. He only has 12 home runs. I don't think that's a lot. So, but it is for him, because I don't think he has as many as at bats as some of the other guys he's in competition with as far as the home run lead. So, that's one aspect, but I just really like how he's putting together better at bats. He's hitting, you know, I looked at his home runs, his spray chart on his home runs. He's really not hitting home runs to right field or center. He's mostly pulling them. Still, he has some power. He just is so athletic. And so I really like seeing what he is doing. He's having a breakout season. He oozes this physical, you know, gift and ability kind of thing. I keep calling him a smaller version of a Michael Jordan, who played the baseball Michael Jordan. And I really can't wait to meet him and have a chat with him when I ever get out there to wherever they're playing and line up some chats with these fighters players, including Gosuke Kato and Ariel Martinez. I want to talk to him, and Manami's a guy I want to talk to as well as some of the foreign players. But I'm just loving what I'm seeing from this kid. But he's still young. He's got a manager who's going to be pulling him in and out of the lineup and putting him at first base. And again, I'm not sure how much experience he had at first base. It doesn't look like he has had a lot. He's definitely not polished at the position, but I think he is, you know, trying to get his at-bats wherever he can, because that's what the players want. They'd rather be in the lineup than on the bench. And again, he's making the most of it. What do you see?
Yeah, big thing is very much like a little bit more like Tongu. And obviously, he's never had, last year he had 314 plate appearances, which was a high. He's still learning and making adjustments. And obviously, he's making good ones because he's just hitting the ball. He's hitting the ball more consistently, and he's hitting it consistently harder. So that's really the big thing there. His strikeouts, he's striking out half as often as he was, which is a huge thing, because if you're, you know, if you just look at the, if you look at the numbers, if you strike out half as often, you know, enough of those balls are going to be hits. But it's not like these hits are, you know, he's just getting the ball through a hole, because he's got 61 hits and 32 of them, more than half, are for extra bases, which is, you know, that's, he was in the area of less than half, but okay, he's basically striking out half as often as he used to. So that's a huge thing.
All right. And then in the Central League, Kazuma Okamoto of the Giants. And I just remember the interview that we had, that you did with Warren Cromartie long ago, and Warren expressing and wanting to stress Okamoto hitting the ball to all fields with power. And then you look at what he's doing, and a lot of his home runs, I mean, he's hitting his fair share to right field. If he gets pitches in his, let's say, comfort zone, because I think the high fastball away is in his comfort zone, but the other pitches are not. And so he's not driving those over the fence, but he gets those high fastballs away and he'll hit some to right. Hasn't hit all that many, but he's certainly killing the ball when he's hitting it, when he's pulling it. 17 home runs, and in fact, he kind of went off in interleague play and had a big one on Saturday, and he just looks really comfortable at the plate. And you know, he's so, I don't know what you would call it. I guess the image that we have is unassuming, because he's not a big flamboyant kind of a guy. Doesn't speak loud. He's got some kind of a timid kind of nature to him, it seems, but the bat speaks loudly for sure.
Yeah, he's what he's doing that he wasn't doing before statistically is basically nothing. You know, when he first came up in his first full year, he hit 30 home runs and drove in 100 and batted 309, and you know, had everybody on Yomiuri television well, let's put it, looking for towels to wipe up the excess moisture in the studio.
Hashtag high heat.
But he's been more or less that player year after year after year. And of course, what it hasn't been what happened to Okamoto. It's what happened to the guy who isn't Okamoto, who put him, you know, who just cast a shadow over him for the last 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he hasn't changed. I look at his numbers this year and, you know, oh, he's got 17 home runs, and he's basically on track to be where he was a couple of years ago. And last couple of years, I don't know about the ball this year. I don't know. I haven't done the research. I mean, I'm going to ask Michael Westbay to do that, because he's more up to date with this stuff than I am right now. But I think last year, definitely the last few years, has seen a decline in home runs that I would probably attribute some of that to NPB playing with the ball. And
he said it.
Well, playing with the ball.
Yeah.
You said it. The ball. Yeah, I did say it indeed. The baseball.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, good. So keep it there.
All right.
Anyway, so I don't really see anything different from him, but what I see is, you know, the same kind of consistency. Yeah, the 322 average is high, but he's always been on the verge of doing that. It's nothing, it's really not remarkable that a guy would hit, you know, a guy who has a 275 career average would hit 322 and 273 plate appearances. It's all within the normal range. I wouldn't think I really don't think he's doing anything he hasn't been doing all along. So,
sure.
But without the guy casting the shadow over him, everyone's going, wow, look at Okamoto. It's like they forgot who he was. It was like,
well, yeah, because he has had lulls in his season, especially so far this year. It hasn't been consistent where he's consistently producing. He's started out a little bit sluggish, woke up, went back to sleep, but now he's wide awake again, and the Giants are loving it. Let's move on. Just quickly, the Shugo Maki of DeNA is leading in RBIs in the Central League, and Yoya Kurihara in the Pacific League, and he's doing it while not really hitting for all that high an average. That's good for those guys, but we got to move on. Pitchers. I want to talk about the pitchers real quick. All right, Shoki Murakami, I guess, is the biggest surprise, and he's the perfect guy to lead the CL in ERA, but he's not actually leading the CL in ERA because he got passed by Kotaro Otake, who's left-handed, I know that, of the Hanshin Tigers, his teammate, and but those two guys, that's another reason why Hanshin is doing so well. You got a rotation with guys like that in it. And
yeah,
so,
two guys who were playing for different teams last year. Otake was playing for the, getting three or four games for the SoftBank Hawks the last 3 years. And Murakami was playing for the Western League Hanshin Tigers, winning a bunch of pitching titles.
That's right. Yeah, but in the minors. So yeah.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Now he's the big thing. He's not a minor thing. Yoshinobu Yamamoto of Oryx as a dude has, been placed firmly in the shadows now of Doki Sasaki. But here he is doing well in the Pacific League again. But he's not at the top in ERA. And who is that, Jim?
Kaimataira. In fact, I don't know
Zero.
But Yoshinobu Yamamoto isn't even among the qualifiers.
I know. What is going on?
He's probably like a half an inning shy, a third of an inning shy or something. That's why.
It's WBC-itis is what everybody's calling.
Well,
stuff
that's
in
true.
The States.
He didn't have a start until like the third week of the season. So.
Yeah, he had a cooling off period.
And Takayuki Kato's ERA is also in that Hanshin Tigers area.
Yeah. I guess one of the interesting guys in this whole thing, well, I'm skipping through, but Shosei Togo of the Giants is the wins leader. Mm-hmm. And he has been good in the Central League. And I think I talked about the fact that he has to take over. We have seen Tomoyuki Sugano make his debut and come out and pitch a couple times. And I saw him get hit with a line drive off the foot today. And he came back right afterwards, which was good. But
and then gave up a two-run home run.
The same inning. But yeah. But this kid, Kenya, I call him a kid, the sidearmer for the Fighters, Kenya Suzuki, he's so frustrating for hitters, and it's obvious from their swings that they go in thinking, okay, we got to slow everything down, got to be patient, and they think they can smoke these pitches, and they hit them foul, and then they just kind of stand there and take some pitches, or they flail at other ones, and they got no idea what's coming, and one of my all-time favorite pitchers, I think Jim bumped into him. He said today was Shunsuke Watanabe, former Lotte Marines pitcher, submariner.
Submarine.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's not quite that, but, he's in the same vein and he can get there. And, he has six wins and leading. Well, he was leading. And when I looked, last time I looked, the Pacific League in wins for a reason, but yeah, I got to update my numbers.
He is leading with six because there's about 12 guys with six wins.
Yeah. You look away for one day and everything changes, right?
I know. What's up with that?
I don't have time to do all this preparation. I'm married with children. Anyway.
Yeah, now we know we're stretching. John's blaming the kids.
No stretch there. They're waking me up in the morning, too.
Okay, I bet they back. You're supposed to mind. That's what they're there for.
But yeah, just to take a quick look at some of those guys. And of course, strikeouts and all those things are exciting. But we can look at those later on in the season. I would just fully expected Sasaki to win a couple games that he hasn't won. And you get spoiled. You get used to seeing him have so much success and think that things are easy. And these guys are human. And the other teams don't want to be embarrassed. They're working hard not to be embarrassed. So I think that's one thing.
Yeah, but credit to the Bay Stars. They had a good solution. Shall we just go into Mr. Sasaki or no?
Yes. So to get into our rocking with Rookie segment. Japan ace Roki Sasaki had a start on June 11th. That was last week. And he went seven innings.
Oh, man.
Allowed two runs.
Good.
Yeah, two runs, five hits, a walk, 10 strikeouts, and picked up the victory over the Hiroshima Carp. It ended up being a 6-5 win because the Carp scored some runs later. Two in the eighth and one in the ninth after Sasaki was gone. So he looked much better then. But what about today? Today, six innings pitched. This is at Yokohama. Four runs allowed, six hits, a walk, seven Ks. Allowed his first home run of the year. And like I said, he was in disbelief that this ball went out to right field. He was shaking his head and laughing.
It was just down the line and just barely over the wall. It was one of those. Yeah. Although, of course, mind you, in Yokohama, the wall's about 200 feet high. So
the wind blows. Yes.
Yeah. So, but no, his fastballs were not good today. Okay. I'll tell you, last week I tweeted right before he gave up his first hit on a ball that really didn't deserve. It was one of those ones that didn't deserve to be a hit. That he had. Basically, I thought he had the best chance to throw a perfect game in his life because his pitches, his command was razor sharp and his pitches were moving. He had hop on his fastball. He was throwing a splitter in the zone and letting guys just flail at it.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't touch him. And then, okay, an MLB scout I talked to today said, you know, what was up with the umpire? And he said he told me that a former MLB player who's a mutual acquaintance said, basically the guy's a jerk.
The umpire
the umpire was a jerk, and that he has a quirky strike zone and he's going to do what he wants to do and nobody's going to tell him no different. So he's kind of like the Japanese version of C.B. Buckner. and Sasaki had a couple of 0-2 pitches that were, they were on the corner. I mean, it's like everybody in the stadium thought they were strikes. The guy was about head back to the dugout and the umpire had to call him back, said, no, I'm going to call that one a ball. And one of those guys walked and that messed things up. And he gave up a fluke single and he ended up throwing a bunch of pitches. And when he started throwing a bunch of pitches, his fastball started to flatten out and they started fouling him off. And what we saw, so that was last week when he had the first three innings, he was as sharp as I've ever seen him in my life. Mm-hmm. And I've watched, and as I said, I've watched virtually every inning he's thrown.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really remarkable. So I was really excited about today, but what I saw today was the flat fastball was the thing. Nobody was swinging under when his fastball is really good. Especially when he throws it high or pretty much wherever he throws it, his command was good. But when he throws the fastball, if nobody's swinging under it, then there's a problem because he's not on top of the ball and he's getting what they call the shuto kaiten. He's getting side spin on it. So his spin is not perpendicular to the ground and the ball is spinning away and it tends to end up on the barrel of bats. If people can time it, they can hit it. And that's what happened. The Bay Stars were fouling off pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch. Taiki Sekine, who, okay, I'm not going to toot my own horn any more than I usually do. Yay! had a tremendous at-bat, 10 pitches. And then he had another at-bat. He just lined the first pitch he saw. So the fastball he was not throwing good fastballs. They were fast. They were hard. And the people in the broadcast booth were going, wow, they're doing such a great job on this great fastball. It's so fast. Where's Nobuhiko Matsunaka when you need it? Because I remember him with a Sasaki start when he was getting lit up. And he's going, it's not about speed is not the big thing here. So anyway, That was the story today. It was basically he was throwing fastballs that were fast but flat, and the Bay Stars were timing them and hitting enough of them that he eventually got whacked.
Yeah, unfortunate, but
his command was good. His command was good, which is something that is a step ahead of where he was. So he needs to marry the good command, and with the good, I think some of that may be to do with the mound. I don't think he's ever pitched in Yokohama before. So.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get a reset here because they, you know, there's those three standalone games through Wednesday, and then Thursday there's a day off, and games restart on Friday. So maybe they'll push him to a different day, hopefully next week, fingers crossed, and we can get him on the show.
My guess is he'll be on next Sunday in Chiba. Yeah.
Stop putting that out in the ethers. All right. One note. Again, Trevor Bauer with the DeNA Bay Stars pitched well the other day. I think it was on Wednesday. He pitched his best game in Japan. And then going into Thursday, I guess late Wednesday, going into Thursday, we started seeing reports of him being accused by another woman of sexual assault. Now, this must have happened sometime. Okay, this is a 2020 incident. All right, you're on top of things. But the details seem to be in agreement with other descriptions of what has happened to other women in the past.
All the complaints, and this is the only one I think where somebody had actually filed court papers in which they could be sort of chided if they say things that aren't true. Although that's, you know, it's not the same as sworn testimony in court, but all of the allegations involve him choking women unconscious.
Yeah, he's got an MO.
Yeah, apparently, but. The interesting thing was the DeNA response was when they signed him was basically don't ask about his past. We're not going to talk about the past. You know, that's the Mark McGwire answer to, were you using steroids? We're not here to talk about the past. So nobody did. And that's fine. Kind of, sort of. And I would only say this, that Trevor Bauer, I don't have an agenda with Trevor Bauer. I know a lot of people who do. I mean, he's got supporters and he's got detractors. But it is true that these allegations have happened. It is true that somebody gave sworn testimony in court, which he then later spun to say it was a lie, but he did not deny in court when he had a chance to do so under oath. Whereas she swore to this under the threat of perjury. And then when on YouTube, he called her a liar. So, you know, you have to take that what somebody says on sworn testimony and what somebody said on YouTube and balance those two. You know, you decide where to give that weight. So those are the things that are about that. Now, I haven't spoken with Mr. Bauer. I know people who have, and that's fine. And but he is there's no doubt that he's a quality pitcher, but there's no doubt that there's been smoke. You know, I didn't want to say there was fire, but the interesting thing with the Bay Stars was, we knew about this allegation when we signed him, which was the closest the Bay Stars have come to actually saying that done anything other than be suspended for an undisclosed reason and be released for an undisclosed reason. And be unsigned by 30 MLB teams at minimum salary for an undisclosed reason. He just magically appeared it's like he appeared in on their doorstep like Santa Claus put him in their Christmas stocking 9 months early.
All right. So, yeah, there have been, I mean, a lot of the plaint, and I say he has an MO. This is coming from complaints available online. You can see him somewhere. You can hear about him a lot of places. So, if you wanted to make a complaint, you could you have a base to go from or to draw from. But anyway, I'd like to talk to him for JBW, but I would just be certain that the DeNA PR team would censor all the questions, and so would he. So but we'll see. I mean, if we can get him on and we can ask about it, we'll certainly throw the questions out and we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, most he can say is I'm not going to talk about that. One other note, I misremembered that game between Rakuten and SoftBank that's going to be played at Tokyo Dome on, I said it was going to be next month, but it's June 26th. So that's a week from the release date of this show. So anybody who wants to go, it's on a Monday. It's Monday Paw League. Remember that? Remember those days?
I do remember that. I think that actually, yeah, I remember you know, it was one of the many Pacific League ideas. One of the few ones that really didn't go anywhere, but it, back in the day when everything the Pacific, it's so funny, everything the Pacific League used to do, the Central League would laugh and say, oh, you bunch of amateurs don't know what you're doing. And then 3 years later, the Central League would turn around and say, oh, we're going to do that too.
Well,
but that was one of the things they didn't copy. But, you know, and Bobby Valentine always thought, and I think this is, you know, that they could do something like that if they had one game, you know, but this idea of marketing one game, you'd need one network to do it. And unfortunately, this is not the way it works in Japan. Teams have their networks. You don't have a nationwide network. I mean, NHK could do it, I suppose, but a Monday Pacific League game or something, or nationally televised game. But
all right. All right. We got to stop it.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. We got to go.
Don't tackle me, man.
We got games on Monday for back-to-back weeks is what that means, essentially. We got a game on release day this week and a game on release day next week. Hey, everybody, if you're sitting, I don't care what country you're in, you're sitting and you're listening to JBW, get us a question. Participate in the show. Let us hear your opinions. Like I said, a question, just a talking point, anything, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter @JBW Podcast with the hashtag HiEat, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week when we know who has won the interleague session. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter @JBW Podcast and @JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with #HiEat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.